The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast. Joshua, Adam, William Arbuthnot, with the ultimate babyface Joel Johnson, and the magnificent Mo, as we look back at 2019, a year in wrestling that will never be forgot. It's a year that the Wednesday Night Wars were unleashed, that four guys took a company and unleashed onto the WWE, and something that we've not seen in 19 years, and that the women of the WWE headlined the biggest show of the year, not to mention the indies had another big boom to them, and New Japan, losing those four big stars, went on to have one of their best G1s of all time. This is 2019 Year in Review. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hello, ladies.
Sorry. Yeah, no. Here I am. I call myself the futurist, and I'm looking back at the past. It's a weird thing for me. But let's get going, because I think we have 413,000 topics.
We do. We're going to get under this. So let's start right away with the big award, Mo. I will give you the honor from the We Talk Wrestling, bringing us on and everything like that. This is the fourth year. I actually think we've done this now. Mo, your wrestler of the year.
Ah, thank you very much for letting me open up on this. I mean, for me, this is a guy, I think, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, I first guested on this, probably. And it was in the early episodes, I would talk to you guys about ROH and say that there's a guy there who's the most talented guy ROH has ever had, like overall talent. And I would hype him up, and you guys weren't so familiar with him. I think Julie might have seen him a little bit. I'm not sure if you had seen him at all yet, Josh. And I said, you know, and I listed the names like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and you know, and AJ Styles, all these people. And I said, this guy's an overall talent. I think is the most talented of all of them. And this is the year that he's cemented his legacy at or near the top of the wrestling world. I don't see how it can be anybody for a combination of what he's done for his brand and the presence he's had and quality of matches. It could be anybody for me but Adam Cole.
Adam Cole, baby, from Mo, Joel.
Well, I had Adam Cole on my list, but I'm going to change it up just so we don't continue to say the same things over and over again.
Oh, yeah, by the way, really quickly, sorry, Joel. Last year, I picked Johnny Gargano. Joel, you picked Tanahashi, and Mo, you picked Ishii.
And Ishii still probably is the best in-ring guy, but
it's G1, and then he kind of disappears for a bit.
Yeah, yeah, it was tough because he's not at the top of the card, so he doesn't have the same chance to be. But boy, what a G1 he had.
Sorry, Joel, go ahead.
I'll be a little bit different. I still I agree with what you said. Like there's no denying what Adam Cole has been able to do this year. I saw it live. I walking around WrestleMania seeing those Undisputed shirts. He has an indelible impact on the product and everything as a whole. It'll be fun to see how they screw him up on the main roster, but that's a podcast for another day. But my pick for Wrestler of the Year for 2019 is Will Ospreay. The guy just killed it in ring and just constantly had 5-star or above matches. His first G1, he had incredible matches with Ibushi and Okada. He may have tempered off towards the end, but I don't know if it matters all that much because his first months heading up with the end of the G1 were downright incredible.
So these are the two guys that I had gone back and forth with. Will had 3-4 of my favorite matches of the year. I think he had the most 5-star matches this year, I believe. But I got to kind of give credit where credit's due with Adam Cole. He took that NXT brand, which all full notice here, we're not counting that as a separate show, like a brand anymore, like a, you know, whatever. But I have Adam Cole too. I think what he was able to do, especially at that takeover that Joel was at, you know, Ciampa goes out and he has to be the kind of the guy there that puts over Johnny Gargano, makes Johnny Gargano look fantastic in what is the match of the year candidate. Everything that he was able to do with the NXT invasion, what he was able to do at Survivor Series, and how he's been able to, you know, be draped in gold and live up to that promise, cut promos, and be the face of maybe the top wrestling company of NXT, at least, if you're going to count that as a company, in the industry right now. I have to go with Adam Cole, but it's really split in hairs between him and Will Ospreay. It was really close for the two between me.
I'm very curious to see what Will Ospreay's 2020, because the style he wrestles, I feel like Adam Cole will have the longer career, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what Will's 2020 looks like and what New Japan wants him to do for them.
A lot of talk of him going up to the heavyweights here.
He would have been, and
you say he tapered off, and it's just, that's largely, and we said Ishii tapered off, and this just kind of, that's the way after G1 kind of the New Japan schedule is, so it gets to be kind of difficult. He was my number two. The consistency for the full year is what made Adam Cole the difference. But I mean, these two were just, they're so great. They're both just fantastic.
It'll be interesting too. You know, we talk about the tapering off in New Japan with guys like Ishii or Ospreay, but with the Olympics this year, that won't be happening until the fall now, the G1. So it'll be interesting how that all goes into play.
You know, I didn't realize that. That's very interesting.
Next up, we have Female Wrestler of the Year. I'm going to start on this one. So there was four candidates in me, and I think the obvious answer for a lot of people is Becky Lynch, and I think Becky's done a good job. I think as far as NXT goes, there's two contenders with Io Shirai and Shayna Baszler. But to me, I looked at someone that has literally been the MVP for their company and has kept that company afloat and really has regenerated what intergender matches have been able to do, and is probably in 2020 going to be the hottest free agent when her contract comes up in the summer. And I have Tessa Blanchard. For everything she's been able to do with that company, you know, great feuds with Gail Kim earlier in 2019. She has been an absolute standout. She went to Impact when people thought that maybe she should have gone to AEW or a bigger company, and she has been the absolute MVP of Impact. And again, like I said, making her the biggest free agent this year and having these intergender matches, and now not just being this situation of like, oh, well, it's a woman versus male match. No, like having the match against Sammy, and that rematch is coming up pretty fast here, showing that she can stand and be not just the best female competitor, but the best overall competitor and one of the best competitors in wrestling right now. Mo, Joel, who wants to go next?
Sorry. Yeah, I was waiting for you to throw to somebody.
I'll go to Joel.
Yeah, it's Tessa. There's nothing more like me said. I mean, the fact that she's in a feud with Sammy and they brawled, like the fact that you know all of this is going on and just the buzz that she's created is just very impressive. A lot of money's going to get thrown her way, but I have a funny feeling she's WWE bound in 2020.
I almost bet AEW because I really think that's who they need. They need her for the women's division. No, they don't have that standout for their women's division.
She's going to want to have matches with Charlotte, Becky, Sasha. Though the matchups alone make WWE more appealing than AEW, unfortunately.
Fair enough. Mo, what do you got?
So, and I got to say that both, that's a great choice for, you know, obviously. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how much the family ties with AEW, you know, and WWE, if those, you know, have any factor at all in any of this. But yeah, I mean, I don't see as much as she, don't get me wrong, she had a great year, Tessa did, but Becky, and the match was what the match was, but Becky stood tall in the main event of WrestleMania as a woman 3, 4, 5, 10 years ago. Can you imagine? Like, go put yourself back in time. That women are main eventing it, and that she's the woman who she was the brightest star in the whole company and the most pushed.
She's the most well protected.
She's the most well protected. She's the best marketed. Like and it wasn't supposed to be her either. No. And I think that's a significant reason for me why I think she's earned it as the female wrestler of the year.
By the way, I got to get better at this, but last year I picked Becky Lynch, and then you two picked Charlotte. We move on to Tag Team of the Year. Last year I finally relented and picked the Young Bucks after not picking them for many years. You guys have been pretty consistent picking the Young Bucks year after year, except one year Mo actually went with the Usos. Joel, I'll let you start on this one. Who's your Tag Team of the Year?
My Tag Team of the Year is the Lucha Bros.
The streak for Joel ends.
I just look at, they're just stars. Both of them as individual and as tag teams are, they're the steel that AEW has. They are going to be future main event talents for AEW wherever they go. But just the buzz, the interest that they create, they get their characters, they get their gimmicks. And just anytime you hear that Pentagon and Phoenix are either wrestling single matches or tag team matches, it's a draw. People are interested to see, and particularly someone like Phoenix, like you've just seen what he's been able to do in AEW in tag team matches and in single. Like they just have had a great year. I felt the Bucks having that little bit of downtime that they had, where it was more focused on building AEW up at the beginning, kind of took them out of the running a little bit, but I still think they had a tremendously strong back half of the year. But to me, just from watching some independent stuff, I think it goes to the Lucha Bros.
I'm going to second that. I also have the Lucha Bros for all the reasons you said. And you know, it's a mix too of, you know, starting the year in Impact and having a great year in Impact and doing a great job there. Everything they've been able to do in AAA, and then having, you know, one of the best matches, one of the most dangerous ladder matches I've ever seen, and then coming to the year end here. And just, I think when we saw them at that press conference for AEW, we're like, wow, that's a good get. And Phoenix on his own, I mean, could be up for wrestler of the year. Phoenix has had a tremendous year in his own right. Mo?
In ring, I'm not so sure Phoenix isn't actually the best.
Yeah.
You know, if he was more of a singles guy, we would have probably been talking about a three-way race for mm-hmm. singles guy. He's so good. And I they're also my team. This one is unanimous. Yeah. Because of the whole year. And they just complement each other so perfectly. You know, Rey Fénix doesn't quite have the charisma, you know, but the moves and the athleticism and the inventiveness, and then, you know, the charisma that comes from Penta is incredible. He's such the best look in wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's got to be him. Like, yeah. you, and then you combine them. They just complement each other so incredibly well. I love it. That's a solid one from all of us, definitely.
Yeah. Where do you think they are at the end of 2020? Are they still tag team, or are they single wrestlers? Or are they one of those things that never fully break up and will float in between?
I think it's that one.
Yeah. Where Phoenix is, it'd be, and even Pentagon, but where Phoenix can go, it'd be crazy at some point, depending, I guess, you know, whoever the champion's going to be at that point. But even at one point, if Moxley doesn't beat Jericho, if you'd be crazy not to at least give Phoenix a rub against Jericho.
Well, I firmly believe we're going to get a Kenny Omega Phoenix match on a AEW pay-per-view for the AAA title, and I think that'll be a tremendous showcase for Phoenix. There've been a few times where I thought Phoenix was going to get the pin on Kenny, and that was the rabbit hole they were going to go down.
Very interesting. Next up, we go to Best on the Mic. Last year, I had Becky Lynch. Joel, you had Samoa Joe. And Mo, you had Juice Robinson. Mo, who are you going with this year?
It's got to be Cody. I think that Cody, as far as his promos, it's a very old school. But, I mean, you listen to the promos, and it's not catchphrases or different things. There's just moments where he will say something that resonates with the crowd in a way that nobody else is doing right now. It's old school babyface psychology done perfect in his interviews. He's really grown into that, and he is not doing it at all as while it is old school, you know, babyface promo. There's his dad's influence, but he doesn't imitate or ape him in any way. Mm-hmm. I think he's just been great on the mic.
Joel?
It's Cody. Like this guy, like you look at, he was probably the one of the more entertaining parts of BTE, the money shakes when he was when Bullet Club was fine. So you knew this guy was talented, but you thought he was just such a good shit disturber that you never saw him as anything else. Then AEW came a thing and he was just the face of it. But even he was a heel and he worked a heel in that 5-star match with Dustin, which was an amazing match. Just a beautifully told story that actually brought emotion from wrestling fans, which is a very rare thing. It's one of the few moments this year that actually created that. And you look at just his rise and everything that has happened with him in AEW. And like Moose said, every promo that he's cut, it's not this cookie cutter. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking? It's always tailored to who he's facing and the storyline he's trying to tell. He's consistently had the best pro. I think he's mostly had the best programs in AEW. And just his promos work. Like we get to see that he's got 3 tasks that he must perform to face MJF. And it just, you're interested to see in his reaction to all of them. And I mean, he says he's never going for that world heavyweight title. And if there's one thing we know about wrestling is never say never. But I just can picture that the momentum that Cody has eventually facing off with someone like MJF in Madison Square Garden and finally winning the AEW world title. And that being an organic moment where a story is told, I feel like Cody is good enough that he can last a couple more years as a top babyface for AEW. And that's from his promos. And he had a killer year. Everything he did from road to wherever they were going, to live on the mic, to just backstage segments, it just worked with Cody every time.
Again, this was kind of splitting hairs for me. I don't have Cody, but it was, again, really, really close. I am going with an AEW talent. I'm going with Jericho. It's very crazy just from the promos that he had for Japan at the start of the year to everything that we got to see in AEW. And you know, he's probably always kind of done his own stuff in WWE for the most part, but really getting the chance to see him off script to how he's been able to get things over with the Inner Circle to, you know, just off-centered comments, like a little bit of the bubbly. He's done such a good job this year, just being such an entertaining character with his promo and really just being able to engage the crowd with something as simple as getting them to shut up from We the People just with a simple dialogue. Again, this was really splitting hairs for me. Both these guys were absolutely electric. Just give the edge to Jericho just a little bit more, just because vocally he just grabbed me in every single time, a little bit more than Cody did, but very close for both of them.
Jericho's amazing. I probably have him third behind, Jake Hager. But other than that, yeah.
Next up, we go to the wrestler. But
nothing to Jake Hager? Nothing? No reaction?
No.
Just doing our best Jake Hager impression.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
By the way, MJF is winning this multiple times over the course of his career.
Yeah, I was going to say MJF probably has this locked down next year. I mean, he's came on so strong in the back half here that you wouldn't be shocked if
he's amazing.
And Montez Ford as well, I think, is someone that's going to be coming for this award.
He has to overcome the writing.
He does. That's the problem there. Let's talk about the broadcaster of the year. Last year, I picked Mauro Ranallo. You two went with Kevin Kelly. Joel, where are you going?
Same as always, Kevin Kelly. Just okay. Anytime I tune in and anytime I'm listening to the English commentary for New Japan, I'm always like, oh, it's Kevin Kelly. This is a breath of fresh air. And every time he delivers, I watched the whole G1 this year again. Any other big show for Japan is just, he was the guy.
For me, Kevin Kelly, he's really impressed me. He's really good. As someone that is a broadcaster and does play-by-play, I always look at these guys a little bit stronger, listening to how they do the calls of everything. I think this year was one of the strongest years for play-by-play. I think almost every single company now has a really good guy to go to. I'm going with Excalibur, though. He was so refreshing. you know, to listen to him call the matches, be the color commentator. You know, JR is, you know, a little bit out there now. He doesn't keep in touch with everything. So just so refreshing to hear Excalibur know, like, the back history of stuff, know the moves, and really, you know, be a great color commentator, kind of almost like a Tony Romo to the wrestling world right now. And that's why I got him for this year for me. Mo?
Yeah, it still is Kevin Kelly. I mean, when you listen to, if you watch every event of the G1, by the time it's over, his level is so much higher than everybody else. And don't get me wrong, I mean, he has a lot of great people on color commentary that he's working with. But part of it is that he works with different people, and they're always great, and you can't say that's not because of him. I do have to say, if Taz is as good as he was this last week and is on every week, he may make it interesting next year, because he was fantastic this on his episode of AEW that he performed in. And I've really enjoyed Shivani. I've thought he's been really good. But, you know, I mean, it has to be Kevin Kelly still.
At what point does AEW move on from JR?
Sooner than later. Because I think he's maybe the worst part of that broadcast at times. And that's nothing against JR. I think he's obviously a legend. Next to Gordon Solie, he's probably the second best wrestling broadcaster of all time to me. But it's time. I think the nostalgia, they needed to set in people when they came to watch Dynamite. They came to watch these pay-per-views to have JR there. But now that they're established, it's time to move on, because he's clearly not there. And a more established event like Taz or Shivani are.
I just felt like Taz did a fantastic job putting talent over on that Dynamite. Just a phenomenal job.
Well, we've seen Taz be good, right? Like when he first came to Impact and he was engaged the product again, he was great. Much like when he went to SmackDown originally and he was engaged the product, he was great. Even on his podcast at times, he's pretty good. Taz can be an engaging broadcasting personality.
It's really frustrating because JR, like the main event, for instance, how well he gets over the story of the elite needs to win so bad. Nobody's as good at that as him, is getting over that story. But I cringe every episode knowing how many mistakes he's going to make on air, calling a guy the wrong name, or this last week, misunderstanding what they're doing with the rankings. And it's every week. It's every single week.
Watch Botchamania. He's all over Botchamania.
Like, it's not good. It's a real damn shame. That's for sure.
Next, we have the best non-wrestling character. Last year, you guys both picked Brandy, and me, I picked Fat Ass Mossa.
Yeah, well, he was a great character.
He was. This year is a little bit more difficult. Joel?
I went with Audrey Edwards for the main referee for AEW.
Interesting.
Because she has a personality, and you know that she's reffing the matches. You know she's the one that they trust the most right now. Is she a little over the top at times? Yeah, there's a few times where you're like, maybe you don't need to go so over the top. But she has a character, and the fact that this T-shirt wrestling company has been able to get over so many talent, including a referee. And that's a credit to her, because they really let people stand on their own two feet. I give her all the credit in the world, and I think she every time you see her, you know you're seeing a big match. She has that feeling when she's wrestling matches.
Like Kevner did and Little Nate does. Mo, who do you got?
Oh man, that's a, you know, I hadn't considered her. That's
a very good one.
It's a really good one. The one I'm going with, and it's weird because I hate the character, hate the angle she's been given, but as a performance, Lana's been fantastic as a performance with what she's given. So I thought
did not
she was
expect
the...
that at all.
No,
especially from you.
But it's true. Like, the characters.
Well, I agree.
I'm not a fan. But yeah, she is doing her best to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. I mean, I really believe that it's not good, but as far as what she is doing, I think is, you know, she's elevating it as much as she can, and you know, and doing her best. And so I mean, I have her as a character. I considered, I'll say, Sami Zayn, because I think Sami, I'm just such a big fan, and he seems to be done as a wrestler for some reason I can't figure out. So
he had a shoulder injury, and they've just let him. I think he's wrestled a little bit here and there, and he's done stuff, but just apparently he needed some downtime to heal his shoulder, and they still wanted to use him, so this was the workaround.
Yeah, I just don't see him. I think they dislike him in this role. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, see him. I wonder if he jumps over to a company like AEW.
Well, and, Vince has never been a fan, right?
Yeah, I could see him. You look at it. If you go back, rewind the clocks, and his run in NXT was fantastic. It was.
He was Mr. NXT.
Yeah. And that's where I just feel like there's enough in the tank for Sammy that if he went to a company like AEW, I think he could put on phenomenal matches and cut.
Be generico.
Yeah. And I mean, he could easily go to Japan and do the exact same thing. So I don't foresee him done wrestling. Maybe in WWE, but not done.
The fans don't have the same. Unfortunately, I believe he just re-signed a new long-term contract recently.
He did, because that's what AEW does to WWE talent. My pick is a little bit controversial in some ways, because we've only seen this character 3 times so far, but it's on one of WWE's actually kind of surprising hits that's done good ratings on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, when you wouldn't think they would. Mine's CM Punk. 3 times he's only been on this show, but the 3 times he's been on it, he has added extra content to wherever he's going. Even him being at what's the thing they do before AEW? I'm blanking right now on the name.
Starcast.
Being at Starcast, and that podcast electrified everything. Him kind of dipping his toe back into the world of wrestling, even not being in the ring, has added something wherever he goes. The whole hype to him coming to backstage and the videos that they did were some of the most talked about stuff that we had this year. Who knows what 2020 holds for him, but as of this year, I have him just in that back half there, really starting to set it up. When he was on backstage, it was a big deal. Next up, we have no backup follow comment on that at all.
No, I think it's a good pick. I mean, you can make arguments against it, but
yeah,
your arguments for it are strong too. So
yeah.
And I respect your opinion. I won't say that out loud a second time. But hey,
it was This was a harder one to pick this year. Just because there really wasn't like the Vanguard one, or like Daniel Bryan when he was a commissioner, or something like that, or like
Paul Heyman when he was just Paul on Heyman. TV a lot and nailing it.
Yeah. So there really wasn't that person as much this year. Most improved wrestler, I'm going to leave with this one. I've gone back and forth with a bunch of people on here. I was going to go with Baron Corbin on this. But, you know, I just because I think he got better in the ring, especially those King of the Rings, I thought he did really good. But I can't excuse the Lacey Evans and his run. It was just some of the worst shit this year. It was entirely god awful, and I can't forgive him. But I will give him an honorable mention, because I think he's done a really good job of, you know, getting better in the ring, and he has genuine heel heat. Rather you want to think that's X-Pac go away heat, or if it's genuine heel heat, I tend to think it's genuine heel heat. But mine is Dana Brooke, of someone that I just want to reward for working. She has continually worked really hard, and she's gotten better and better and better. And I think I know who both of you guys may pick, and that's in a bigger stage and bigger circumstance, and it's definitely a right pick. I just look at this as an award of someone that literally has put in the work and has done a really good job and gotten better and better. As someone that, you know, when we saw originally, we'd roll our eyes and go, great, Dana Brooke. But I think it's going to be a bigger 2020 for her, and I think she's done a tremendous job of just getting into the ring and working on her mic skills. She's been a lot better in the mic skills, and she's gotten a lot better in the ring.
Who do you think we're going to pick?
I think you're picking Moxley. I don't know who Mo's picking, so you go ahead.
I wasn't even picking Moxley. But that's a really good one. The one that I had written down, I'm going to talk about both because I like both. The one that I picked was Lance Archer.
That on my list too, so that's a good pick.
I look at Lance Archer when you first go in, it's like, all right, well, it's Lance Archer, yeah, whatever. And then just he's kind of gained a lot of fandom and notoriety, and he's just really worked into his role in New Japan really well. And I think he's taken steps forward as a performer. That's like, okay, this death match with Moxley is going to be, I'm interested in this. I'm sold on this. Before, if you told me that, I'd be like, well, it's Moxley, so I'm in. But I think both guys kind of draw you in. And as for Moxley, Moxley's just, Dean Ambrose was DOA, and now he's maybe the ace of AEW. Like, he's just, anytime he comes out, it's a big deal. He has a big entrance. He just feels like money. So it's a tie. I've decided to change my mind, and it's a tie. It's between Lance and Moxley for me.
Mo, who do you got?
Yeah, I have Moxley because I have him like a worst wrestler of the year.
Oh, he's all over last year for the worst wrestler. It's Dean Ambrose. Like a Bray Wyatt year, the year prior. It's dominated by Dean Ambrose.
I mean, come on. And then now I look forward to every time I'm going to see him, whether he's cutting a promo or wrestling. I look forward to him every time I want to see him. And yeah, I agree. He looks like money. Now, I will say that the guy I considered is kind of out of the box. Because he came back from injury late in the season. But since he's come back, he's a different guy. He's in better shape. Finjuice won the World Tag League Tournament, and David Finlay has really improved, guys, a lot.
Glad to hear that. I like him. By the way, last year picks, I picked Velveteen Dream. Joel, you picked Jay White. And Mo, you picked Mustafa Ali. Next best comeback. Joel and I both picked Daniel Bryan, and Mo, you picked Tanahashi. You can lead this one for us.
Well, I mean, I have the same guy. You know, when you talk about most improved, usually I would give it to a guy like Mustafa Ali, that's what I'm saying. Oh, I'm saying that's my point. But
right.
Best comeback is still Jon Moxley. You know, like because it is a comeback. This is a guy,
sure.
Like he is most improved. Like he's both, you know, it's a rare case where I think he deserves both of them. Like that's how big his step up from what he was, from how little he obviously cared when you saw him. And it's not that he didn't want to do good, but you could see he just didn't care. You could see how much the love of wrestling and life was beat out of him to where he is. Yeah, that's the comeback. So I have him a second time.
That's a phenomenal pick, Joel.
My comeback, I'm going to go a little different on this. I agree with what you said, Mo. I think you're spot on. My pick is Bray. Like, this is a guy that, when you saw the Sister Abigail and just any little thing that he was doing, it was like, I don't care anymore. Like, who gives a shit what Bray's doing? It just, the character lost its luster. They poorly booked. It wasn't working. And this guy was on his way out. Like, he was, if the Fiend didn't work, he was DOA. And he did these Firefly Hunt fun houses, and they just caught on, and they just kept growing and growing. And I mean, the Hell in the Cell is rough, and the red light is rough, but I'll never forget that reaction that he got in SummerSlam versus Finn. Like, it was just phenomenal. It was great. And I mean, he's world champion. Like, and the story that they've told with him, I think it's probably by accident, because any good thing in WWE is done by accident. I mean, we can go through a long list, but they've created this story where anyone that has to face the Fiend, Bray Wyatt, is a changed person. Like, they've changed how they interact moving forward. Their character changes. And I think it's been very interesting. It always seems like he brings something out in someone. Like, you now see Seth is back to his old ways as being an asshole heel. Brian's back to the Yes Movement. There are little moments where guys have reverted back or changed in one way or another. And it's very interesting to see. And it just, this guy, no one gave a shit about. And now you give a shit about Bray Wyatt. And I mean, at the end of end of the year, heading into this year, I'm not sure how everyone's going to feel about Bray. Not going well. Where everything's going, but I'm a fan. I was a fan of what Bray did.
Another good solid point. I think you guys both make good arguments. I got Rey Mysterio. I think when he first signed back with WWE, you know, we can all say the reason that was there. It was to keep him away from New Japan, from whatever AEW was going to be. He started the year off with, we forget, but that January, he was up for Wrestler of the Year in January. Those earlier matches that he got to have with Andrade, there was like one match on SmackDown specifically. It was like almost a five-star match. And not just, you know, in the ring that he has really done a good job of coming back, but his mic skills. I think this is the best Rey Mysterio has ever been on the mic. The stuff that he was able to do with Dominic to lead up to the Brock match, you know, even during the Cain Velasquez stuff, being Cain Velasquez's mouthpiece, he did a tremendous job with that. You wanted to see that match more to the point of him doing such a good job to, you know, you have that spot at Survivor Series when they do the double frog splash, him and Dominic, and you really buy into Rey is going to beat Brock for the title. Rey's kind of came back as a guy that we really look at as being one of the top guys. He hasn't came back and just looked like another legend. I know he recently dropped the title to Andrade, but I think he's really held his own as one of the top guys in the company, and it's really nice to have that Rey Mysterio back. It's someone I don't think I appreciated enough when he was around in the later 2000s, and I'm really glad to have him back and kind of like almost like LeBron James in his later career, just still putting out the quality that we depended and seen from him in the past.
That's a great pick too. I do think without a question, best guy in the mic in WWE this year
was Rey. Yeah. He got so good. I don't know where that,
I know.
It's kind of like
not, he just became never good. Was before, but he is now.
Best gimmick. Joel, I'll let you take this one.
Best gimmick is the haggard rock star alcoholic that has surrounded himself with individuals to protect him. It's Chris Jericho. He has been fantastic in AEW. The little bit of the bubbly, like he's created great moments. That promo package that he had where he parodied Cody, from kissing Sammy to the different people that he had, just this old rock star that feels like he's bigger than AEW has just been money. And he was absolutely the right choice as their world champion.
Mo?
Yeah, I got Bray. I think as far as creating an original character that stood out from the pack, especially doing that within the WWE, considering all the obstacles you have to overcome, his creativity is off the charts, and I absolutely think it's the gimmick of the year.
I'm just to save his time, I'm gonna go with everything you said. I got Bray as well. Last year, by the way, I picked Daniel Bryan, Joel, you picked Becky, and Mo, you picked Suzuki. Last year.
Scrampa.
Yeah, all I say, and that is, it's a thing when we saw this Mr. Rogers thing, we're like, this is going to be horseshit, and it's going to be terrible, and Joel ends
I was
up,
so damn skeptical.
We all were.
Because I heard about it before I saw it, I was so damn skeptical, and I couldn't deny it.
And if I would have told
Hustle
you...
Hustle Man Dance.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you would have said you would have had a pig named Huskus, and he would have done this dance, and it would have been one of the more entertaining things on WWE television this year, you would have thought I was loony, but he ended up doing that. Match of the year, one of the big ones here. Last year, I picked NXT's TLC match from WrestleMania weekend. Joel, you picked Omega and Okada 3. And Mo, you picked Tanahashi and Ibushi. Mo, who are you going with this year?
This is so damn...
It's so hard.
It's so damn hard.
I know.
There's so many great ones. The one that I keep coming back to me that stood out is and has left the longest lasting memory is actually Okada versus Ospreay at the G1. Like it's just
that's my G, by the way.
Yeah, it just highlighted both guys' personalities and strengths so well, and told such a great story and elevated Ospreay even in his loss, just so damn good. So it's the one that at the end of the day I came back to. I will say this, I do want to point out one match because ROH has had a real bad year.
Yep.
But on, and if you go back to June of this last year and you watch the two real-life brother teams take on each other, Roosh and Dragon Lee versus the Briscoe brothers, and that's their match of the year. Almost nobody's seen it. Go out of your way to see it. You would think that's the hottest wrestling company in history. If you watch that match, it's incredible. So that's a match I wanted to highlight. But so many great ones. Runner-up for me is probably actually Tyler Bate and Walter. I love that match.
Yeah, the G1 in itself had 30,000 matches.
Yeah, I know. It was so crazy. And I think this is where Joel's going. So did the cruiserweight best of the Super Juniors tournament.
NXT had so many. AW had so many. I really love that Ospreay and Ibushi match from last January 4th. It's the match I've shown to the most non-wrestling fans. They're like, oh my God, your boy Ishii during the G1 was just unbelievable.
So many people in the
There's one match in NXT WrestleMania. I don't know if Joel's going to go with that. So if he is, I'll let him talk about it. If not, I'll talk about my feelings about it after.
Considering he was live for some great matches, that might influence
him. And Brian and Kofi, too, I think is more of a sentimental thing of far as what that did for African-Americans is seeing Kofi win the title and the emotions of what that meant, and Mania being pretty dull up to that point and really re-engaging and Brian doing such a good job. But anyways, Joel, your pick here, bud.
Well, this is so tough because you mentioned Kofi and Kofi and Brian. I really liked Jay White versus Okada at the G1 Supercard. I love, and it is my number two this year of the Gargano Cole. I love that match. That was such an incredible experience to see live. But for me, the best match of the year was the Best of the Super Junior final, Shingo Tataki versus Will Ospreay. I didn't have too much of an idea who Shingo was. I kind of have a general idea. He was running through everyone in the Best of Super Junior, and Will was being Will Ospreay, and just the match that they had was amazing. Just phenomenal, told a great story, helped elevate both guys, and we saw both of them partake in the G1, and just Will win his second Best of the Super Junior. This was really tough. This isn't easy. I don't sit there and go, oh, this was a cakewalk, but to me, it was the Best of the Super Juniors. And number two was Cole and Gargano.
And Cole and Gargano, this the one that you mentioned, and also the Rhodes brothers.
Yes.
Those are the five that I
Walter were and on Bate.
My, yeah, Walter and Bate. Like I say, these are the ones that stood out for me this year.
It was a hell of a year. Feud of the year, Joel.
Feud of the year is Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan. It was very eerily similar to when Bryan went to 30. People wanted Kofi. They're starting to get behind Kofi. I remember that elimination chamber and just how close Kofi got, and just the rumors online circulating of Kofi not being involved in the main event to Mania, even though it seemed very obvious and very apparent that's the way they should go. And then just the payoff of that moment. Just the amount of people at WrestleMania that were high-fiving and hugging each other and just genuinely happy. If you were going to be smart and trim down the number of matches for WrestleMania and tidy everything up, no knock to the women, but that absolutely should have closed the show because that had the biggest emotional release of a wrestling match that I've ever seen live. Just finally Kofi having that moment and just the happiness from everyone around was just incredible. So that to me, I think I'm influenced by those final moments, seeing it live. But even as a fan, the build to it and just the waiting and the wanting to see Kofi finally get it was really good. And by that point, you saw Seth beat Brock. So you thought Brian was going to retain because you go in with the mindset of you can't all have happy endings. And this WrestleMania had happy endings.
Mo?
Yeah, I got the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks. Based on the quality of matches and that ladder match, I thought that we kind of been waiting years for to kind of see this in the proper stage, to see those teams go at it. And we finally got to see them go at it, and it did not disappoint. It was really a rivalry based mainly on quality, and between the two teams that have the rights, the real life right to stake the claim as the best on the planet. So to me, that was rivalry of the year.
That's my rivalry of the year too. I just think that they, you know, we were hyping up so much, and when they got to the ladder match, you're like, yep, this is the proper way to actually pay off a ladder match. Take lessons. Next up, we have best angle of the year. Last year, we all picked Aleister Black, and I'm assuming that's just the idea of how they were booking Aleister Black, I'm guessing. Joel?
Well, that was the injury angle, wasn't it?
When there you go. Hurt,
there
you go.
And then he had to come back.
There you go. That was fantastic. Joel, what do you got for angle of the year this year?
Angle of the year. I don't know if this is more of a moment, but I picked it, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to go with it anyways. It was Moxley's debut at Double or Nothing. Just everything that happened with that moment. You knew the crowd was waiting for something more with Jericho, and just the reaction Moxley got, the beatdown on Jericho, the beatdown on Kenny, and just how much that single moment set the wrestling world on fire, and just how many times I've seen that clip, and I've watched that clip of just Moxley coming down and that crowd reaction. It's just fantastic. So it's John Moxley's debut at Double or Nothing.
For me, I'm going to go with the NXT invasion. You know, it was a very, it's one of those situations where I think it's the first time in a while that you can just say something and you'll know what episode of a WWE show you're talking about. You know, wrestling, for the most part, episodes just start blending in with each other. And then NXT invasion episode was so well done. They booked NXT so well with more or less the entire thing. They got people over, especially Rhea Ripley, I think, came out shining like roses almost out of anybody, the best. Adam Cole versus Daniel Bryan was a phenomenal match. You got to see Keith Lee and Matt Riddle in it. It was so well done. It was such an exciting, even Pat McAfee getting to go on broadcast and show some of his skills. It was so well done, added to such an electrifying night, and was one of the first times in a long time I can just remember people being like, you need to watch SmackDown, because this is like a game-changing type of episode to watch, and it's a must-see television. You don't hear that as much about certain shows anymore. It's like, oh yeah, that AEW was good, or NXT was good, or, you know, Raw was actually surprisingly good, but this was like, you need to see this. Mo?
Yeah, honorable mention to the MJF and Cody storyline.
Yeah.
And the slow burn on that. But in the G1 final that evening, when Kenta went full heel.
No!
Oh, that's a great one!
Oh!
You guys forgot that one, did you?
I did. I may have to change it.
Kenta goes full heel, and you have the stuff with Shibata. Mm. Like, to me, and the heat. Good Lord, the heat. The real heat when he was sitting in, you know, cross-legged at the end there. Like, phenomenal. Like, that's what wrestling's supposed to be. That's one of the best angles I've ever seen in execution.
It's a great pick. Do you want to change yours at all, Joel?
No, I'll stand by mine.
I'll stand by mine too, but that's a phenomenal one. And I don't know if there'll be a payoff for it at all, but I will say the one thing with Kenta is I think he's made Bullet Club kind of cool again. I still think there's work to do with that, but you know, him doing that and going to the Bullet Club, it was probably one of the more exciting things we've had with Bullet Club since the initial elite guys had left Japan.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think I consider him for, you know, a lot of awards this year, actually, including comeback.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. So this is the one that I've been struggling with as much, is show of the year. I keep on kind of going back and forth on it. So I'm actually going to be interested. I'm going to see what you guys go with before I kind of make my decision, because it's kind of cheat that way. So, Mo, I'll let you go first with your show.
Well, and I just mentioned it. I think there's no – when you look at the angles, there were so many good angles and such great wrestling. The G1 finals, like it set up everything – pretty much everything we're excited for and we can't wait for in – Wrestle Kingdom, you know, that that is coming up right in the heels of this recording and is going to be fantastic. It all came from that night. Like, to me, that's the best show of the year. Though I do think that the WrestleMania takeover is pretty damn close.
These are the two I'm debating about. Joe, what do you got?
I was there live, so it's different. It's NXT TakeOver New York. It's just, that was my second TakeOver. That was the first wrestling show I saw that weekend. I believe that was the first one. Then it was MSG. It was the first time being there. Just WrestleMania weekend was so incredibly special. It was so amazing to be there, and that was the best show that I saw that weekend. Just phenomenal wrestling from top to bottom, very strong card, and just the payoff for Gargano, and that moment with Ciampa was just the icing on the cake. So,
and Walter and Pete Dunne, which some people really hate, but some people have their match of the year.
It was great.
I enjoyed it. I like Riddle versus Velveteen, the tag team match with Viking Raiders and Aleister Black and Ricochet. Just when you're sitting there watching it live, you're like, oh, this is great. And then you're like, oh, this is the first time I'm seeing these guys. Like, this is the first time I'm seeing Black. This is the first time I'm seeing Ricochet, Viking Raiders. Like, the women's match was solid. It was probably the weakest out of all of them, but it was still a good match. Seeing all of them, seeing Velveteen's entrance with the Statue of Liberty. Matt Riddle was great to see live, and just the talent that he has. And then just seeing Johnny come out, and then Adam Cole, and just the reaction Cole got. And just how they slowly turned the crowd back towards Johnny was very impressive. The G1 final is amazing as well. You're literally flipping a coin and deciding. I think mine's a little weighted because I was there live.
Yeah. I think the angle, like that Kenta angle, is what swings it the other way, that it had great wrestling and a great angle, whereas the TakeOver was more just the wrestling.
No, for sure. I'm going to lead a little bit more to TakeOver as well, but, I mean, it was splitting hairs again. It's one of those situations where you have – in a lot of these, you almost have two really good choices, and you can't go wrong with either one of those. By the way, last year I picked NXT New Orleans, so back-to-back WrestleMania weekends. Joel, you picked All In, and Mo, you picked Final Battle. What a year has changed with that pick.
I didn't even bother watching Final Battle this year.
Yeah, we'll get to ROH in a bit when we get to the next selections of stuff. Next up, we have the best promotion. So NXT, we've decided, is no longer part of this. They're under the WWE banner. So you can pick NXT if you want to, but you're picking WWE. I believe you guys will do a better job if you do pick this to talk about it. So I'll just say I'm going to pick New Japan Wrestling just for the simple fact of unbelievable G1 is someone that, you know, as me, that's, I try to make as much time to watch the G1 if I can, but it's hard. Every time I got to watch the G1 was phenomenal. I know a lot of people weren't as high in Wrestle Kingdom in 2019, but I still thought it was a phenomenal show. Anytime I tuned into a New Japan show, it was phenomenal. And losing the guys from the Elite, much like that year, they lost AJ and everyone, and they still kind of kept on trucking. This year, they lose Kenny Omega, and they still find guys to make it work, having great angles like they did with Kenta and making it work. So I have New Japan Wrestling, Joel.
New Japan Pro Wrestling. Mo, if this is your pick as well, then I'll just let you talk and sing New Japan's praises.
Yeah, it is New Japan. New Japan Pro Wrestling is the best pro wrestling on the planet. I mean, there is no doubt about it. There's always a little bit of entertainment thrown in, but it's mainly a wrestling product. What stands out is the booking is literally, they're thinking a couple years ahead. Everything they're doing, like everything else is they're trying to bring together short term storylines. These things, what we're seeing today in this Wrestle Kingdom, the seeds were planted for and it was laid out for a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and it will lead into something a couple years from now. That's so different. So not only do you have the best storytelling, you also just have the most consistent, best wrestling because of the style and the guys being allowed to do it. I mean, honestly, it's amazing to me. I can't really think of matches that stood – like WWE has more television time than anybody, more pay-per-views than anybody, they should have so many 4-star and more matches, and you struggle to think of them.
I have that Andrade and Ray one from January that I can think of.
From January. Yeah. Like, yeah. That says a lot. That's why New Japan is just a phenomenal, phenomenal company. NXT has more great matches than WWE, and think about that. If you really think about that, by all rights, they should not. Less television time, less pay-per-views, less everything.
Next up, we go Show of the Year. So, obviously, what we've done is for this is everything for show. Last year, by the way, for promotion last year, it was a clean sweep for NXT, but now we're putting them under the WWE banner. For Show of the Year last year, Joel and I both picked BTE. Mo, you picked Edge and Christian, so not even going near Raw and SmackDown on that. Mo, what do you have for Show of the Year?
I do have NXT. I can't give it to Dynamite. They haven't been around long enough.
No, I have NXT as well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they consistently, they're a terrific show. They're still a terrific show. Dynamite, I enjoy slightly more, but I mean, sometimes NXT is still better than Dynamite. And Dynamite is probably the leader for this next year, but you know, right now, I mean, NXT is the right choice, and obviously we all have it.
Anything you want to add, Joel, before we move to the next one?
They have Undisputed Era, so they're trucking along really nicely, so that really helps them.
Next up, we have Breakout Star for the next year. So these are predictions for who will be a Breakout Star for the next year. Joel and I both picked Becky Lynch, so not a terrible pick for both of us. Mo, you went with Jay White. I think just want to talk about before we make the picks. I don't think the Jay White pick is bad or good. I just don't know if he was particularly ready. Obviously, New Japan was, but he had a pretty good G1, so let's call it a toss up for him, I suppose.
He was the best heel to go against Ibushi for that final night. He added to the story greatly.
He got better within the G1, I thought. Yeah, that's when he really started shining.
The G1 is where when especially since he started off in a losing streak and then came back.
The belt was too much for him, I think.
The belt was too much for him, and he was getting too many wins over Okada, just dominating him. You couldn't buy it. I didn't buy it. But if you look at him from 1 year ago to today, you feel better about the idea that he's in the Tokyo Dome main event and could be in the double main event. Like, it doesn't feel like a stretch anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. For Breakout Star of the Year, Joel.
Shingo Tataki. He dominated Best of Super Juniors, lost to Will, had a great G1, went to heavyweight, and I just think there are bright things in his future, because I think the lariat he throws is just a work of art. I think he's extremely talented, and I think you look at some of the matches he had in the G1, like with Naito, Moxley, Ishii, like he just was spitting out quality matches, and I think he could be a guy that finds some footing in the heavyweight division.
Mo?
Yeah, I considered this guy for Breakout Star of the Decade, and I'm definitely convinced after this last week that he deserves it for this year. He's just got something special. That's Darby Allin. I still hate his ring gear. I hate his ring gear. Everything else about him. He's got so much presence. He's got such a look, and his ability, I believe, to connect to a younger audience is incredibly rare in 2020. So he's my pick.
My pick is Keith Lee. He was able to stand toe-to-toe with Roman Reigns. He was one of the highlights of that Survivor Series. You can tell there's big things planned for him. He has all the tools you need to be a great WWE superstar and to be a main event at WrestleMania. The only thing that is against him is age. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that's against him. But other than that, I think there's a high potential for him. Great picks from all of you guys. My favorite award of the year, the Shit Sandwich Award.
So that wasn't on my list.
Oh, it's been here for the last 3 years.
What is it again?
So pretty much the person that we admit that we were wrong on. So last year I had Ruby Riott. Joel, you had Jay White. And Mo, you had Baszler. I'll start first if you guys want to come picking up and stuff. I'll pick Baron Corbin. It's someone, again, like I think that you can go back and forth, whatever you want to say about the guy. I think in that King of the Ring, you know, when people saw him listed for King of the Ring, they groaned and moaned. They go, oh, my God, he's probably going to win this, and that's going to be the worst thing in the world. And he's done a great job using that and his heel persona. I know people weren't a big fan of the dog food thing. CM Punk was, but I know a lot of people, other people weren't. I just appreciate him. It's very hard nowadays to get genuine heel heat. You know, there's a lot of people that are heels, but they're cool heels. Like, you have the Undisputed, and you have other heels that are like, oh, well, we're supposed to boo them, but they're cool. But so we'll boo them because, you know, I guess that's what we're supposed to do, but, you know, they're cool heels. Baron Corbin, you genuinely, when you want to see him, you want to boo the living shit out of him. You want him to get his ass kicked. And he's done a tremendous job of that. He stood toe-to-toe to the Rock and took a few blows, but held his own. And I really respect him for doing that. He's gotten better in the ring. He's not someone you're going to sort of to always want to see. I understand that. But I really respect the guy for increasing his level this year and being a guy that, to me, was like wanting to turn off my TV whenever I saw him, to, you know, making me laugh a few times when he cuts promos and whatnot, but also wanting me to see him get his ass kicked. So that's mine. Mo?
Well, I mean, I could say Bray Wyatt, but I mean, it is Jon Moxley, because yeah. I did not think he had it in him. Like, I didn't think he could be good. I didn't even think when he left he would be good until I saw that video. The video when he first left, I went, okay, wait, this guy still cares. But I didn't think it was possible. And so, I mean, I was wrong. Like, I could not have been wronger.
Joel?
Ms. Moxley. He's probably going to be one of the hottest stars for AEW moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. Next, we go to the biggest story of the year. I think this is the clean sweep. We're all – like, last year it was the Elite, and I think because we kind of saw it was coming. But even going to that, I think it's a clean sweep for AEW, right?
Yeah.
It absolutely is. The formation of AEW is the biggest story of the year.
Yeah.
Honorable mention again to the WWE Network deals, the big money coming in and being on Fox. That's a big deal. And the women in the main event. That's the other big one. But nothing's as big as, you know.
They had a competition. I mean, I thought they died when they got that zero rating, but apparently they're back.
Yeah.
I don't watch it as much as you guys do, but I'm very happy that it's there. I think the biggest thing it is you just talked about Sami Zayn getting a 5-year deal. Dana Brooke just got a 5-year deal. The Good Brothers, they got a 5-year deal where I think if AEW is not around, they probably just say like, fine, go to New Japan. We don't give a shit. But people are getting 5-year deals in WWE because they don't want them to go to AEW, and it's giving you a lot more, leeway and negotiation tactics when you're dealing with WWE and your contract. And now as a free agent too, if you're in commodity like a John Morrison, you're going to be able to get a bigger contract because that option is there now and on a platform like TNT that scares WWE and not wanting you to go over there.
So good for the business. It's just so good for the business.
Stephanie's admitted it's good for the business.
Yeah, and she's an idiot.
Yeah. Joel, what do you want to add?
No, everything that needs to be said is said.
Worst wrestler of the year. Last year, I picked The Undertaker. Joel, you picked Shane. And then Mo, you picked, I'm going to butcher this name, Takahashi Ikuza.
Oh, yeah. You're butchering it, but don't worry about it.
I figured. He's
retired now.
Okay. This may be a clean sweep. For me, someone I always appreciated and I always had a good time watching, but this year just became unbearable and he got worse and worse and worse, and it's Shane McMahon for me.
Yep.
I finally just had enough, and Joel's kind of co-signing on that. I finally had enough. He got sloppy in the ring. He wasn't good. You know, the stuff with Miz, it was poorly executed. It was a fine match. The stuff with Kevin Owens was annoying, and the stuff was okay, but he's just not good in the ring. I'm glad that he's off of TV right now because he's just unbearable whenever he's in the ring, and those punches are just the fucking worst punches ever.
Well, he killed KO's momentum. KO had decent momentum, and then the minute they had KO apologize, he just lost any momentum that he had.
Yeah, he did. Mo?
Clean sweep here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have not been ashamed. I like Shane McMahon as a character when he came back and he's not wrestling.
Me too.
Like as a baby face, you know, that's good. But as soon as it was like he starts to get in the ring, and then when they were turning him heel, I was dreading it, you know, just dreading it, knowing it was going to happen. It was as bad or worse than I thought.
Female of the year last year was a clean sweep for Nia Jax. I won't be surprised with the same thing. I have Nia Jax again from the moment she got in the Rumble. You know, she hurt R-Truth taking him out of the Rumble. I believe she hurt two other female athletes this year in WWE. She's consistently just sloppy in the ring. I know she's been out now with an injury. Maybe in that time she's had a chance to improve, but she's been given really good opportunities, and she's just not been able to live up to those opportunities. So for me, it's Nia Jax. Mo?
Well, for me, it's Lacey Evans.
That's a good one, too.
She's just not ready. They aren't patient enough. They're inconsistent with her character as well. She's everything that's wrong with the WWE system right now.
Mm-hmm. Joel?
Yeah, it's Lacey. Like, she took any momentum Becky had heading out of Mania, and it zapped Becky. And Becky's gotten back to it, but it felt like it zapped her. That whole feud, mixed tag feud, was just a killer for any momentum.
Next, we have some of these answers I'm really excited for. You guys killed it last year. Worst tag team? Mo, you had Bayley and Sasha, which kind of proved to work. Joel, you had Brothers of Destruction. And I had the entire mixed match challenge. Phenomenal. My worst tag team of the year is Lacey Evans and Baron Corbin. It was only for one match together, but they destroyed, like you were talking about, the momentum that Becky had. This is the time, too, where they were doing the Becky and Seth are a real couple, and that was just absolutely god-awful. And they built it up for it. I think it was only – that feud was only for a month, but it seemed like 3 months that was going on. With those two, there was no chemistry between them whatsoever. It was a god-awful pairing between the two of them, and it led to a terrible match with Brock coming out at the end. That was probably the best part about that, but still wasn't too great. So I have Lacey and Corbin. Joel?
Yeah, it's different. Mine is because I got to see them live and potentially try to ruin my Tanahashi, seeing Tanahashi come out. It's Enzo and Cass.
I love that one.
Just any time that they are mentioned when it comes to professional wrestling, it just doesn't end well. Big Cass has clearly issues that need to be worked on, and I just don't think pro wrestling's healthy for him. It's just anytime he seems to get into a wrestling setting and it goes for a little bit, he either falls off the wagon or something happens, talks about murdering people, and Enzo's just Enzo Amore. That's all you need to say.
Mo?
Okay, so those are great picks. I could easily go with either one of them. Lacey's my worst female wrestler, and every time you praise Baron Corbin, I bite my lip and think,
I know.
He's allowed to have his opinion.
Good job by you.
And, you know, only because I guess they've worked some indie dates, but they're just so off the radar. I go with a team. I just think it's the drizzling shits. And it's too bad because the guys don't – it's not – I think they might have a little potential, but they're just so bad right now. People don't really know about them because they're an NXT UK thing. They're a team called Pretty Deadly. You just look them up to see the YouTube. Everything about it is just – it's just the drizzling shits.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar with them, but that's a fantastic one. Next we go to worst on the mic. Mo, you definitely did pick Baron Corbin last year. Joel, you picked Dean Ambrose, and I picked Nia Jax. Joel, who do you have this year?
I got no idea. There's some really bad ones out there. Come back to me. I'll come up with something.
Yeah, I got Lacey Evans again.
Yeah.
Just think she's just – it's just so – like, all of it, it's WWE, everything, WWE writing and their scripting.
Which is funny, because the thing with the cop is kind of good. And that's why I was like, I almost want to not give her that, because the thing with the cop was so well done.
But does one moment make up for all of that?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
and that was, there was no cop. Like, that was
Natty's cousin.
Yeah.
Joel, you need to go clean sweep with it?
Yeah. It's just rough.
Next up, we have the most underutilized performer. I had Sasha Banks. Joel, you had Kevin Owens. And Mo, great pick, Grand Metalik. Joel, who do you have this year?
Well, wait, did you say most underused or most underrated?
Underused.
Okay. I was thinking of it as underrated for some reason, so now
I had underutilized, so...
Yeah, it's underutilized, underused. Underutilized, most underutilized performer.
Well, he's not going to be underutilized anymore. It's Andrade. I had made this pick, and then he won the U.S. title, and he got engaged to Charlotte. So, life's not bad for La Sombra.
But for the most part, you're not wrong. He has been underutilized. You know, it looked at
the elbow that he had against Ricochet, he should beat Brock at Mania. McIntyre should beat Brock at Mania.
Mo, who do you got?
First, is there a most underrated?
No, there isn't.
Then it would have been Shingo. Would have been my pick there. But since I can't go with that, and I'm flying off the seat of my ass here, but most underutilized. I'm gonna go with Sami Zayn then, because I do think he still could be a major wrestling star, and I fear that his life as long as he's with the WWE is only gonna be as a manager going forward.
It's a pretty good pick. Mine's Samoa Joe. You look at what the back and forth has been with him. They don't know what to do with him. But you put him on these talk shows, right? You put him on backstage. You put him on the panel. You put him on Raw commentary. And you're like, he's so good at talking. When he gets a microphone, he's so good. And when that last Raw of the year, when he comes down, you can hear the electricity for him coming. And maybe this face turn will be the green light for him, because he can be the main event guy. But I feel the destiny that all they see him in is the next Kane of, tonight you got a match with Samoa Joe. And that's, Joe is so much more deserving of a destination than that.
I think that the fact that he keeps getting hurt is part of the reason why he hasn't gone. So I think that's, yeah. But other than that, I mean, you're definitely not wrong.
Next up, we have worst gimmick of the year. I picked Dean Ambrose. Joel picked Dean Ambrose and vaccinations. And Mo, you picked heel authority. Pretty good one there. Who do you have this year, Mo, for the worst?
Largely gone now, right? Heel authority.
Somehow. Yeah. What do you got this year?
So this is a weird one. So I have worst gimmick is the same as my best gimmick.
Oh.
Bray Wyatt.
That's funny, because I did that too.
Oh my God, you're kidding. Well, because the best, the gimmick when he came out and everything like that. And
it's the red lights.
It up. But then there's the gimmick in the ring.
Yeah.
There's the matches, and there's the red lights, and there's this the mallet, and just the stupidity. It's the worst in-ring presentation. It was everything, all the backstage promos and building up to it. That was the gimmick of the year, and it still is. It's still cool. But it's not cool once he starts wrestling. It's so cheesy in WWE and sports entertainment, and the worst style of sports entertainment. Just bad stuff. So I have the same guy for best and worst. And apparently, how many times have we picked the same thing here? Like, this is crazy.
I know. I on the same wavelength. I think Bray is a multiple time winner of this too, because Sister Abigail did one, got a clean sweep 1 year. So it's not the first time for Mr. Wyatt to get that. Joel, what do you got?
I went with librarians. Just
ooh, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Didn't
yeah.
click. Didn't work. It's faded away from TV. To their credit, they didn't try to ram it down our throats like another company would. They eventually let it fade, but it didn't work.
Next up, we have worst match of the year. I thought this was done, and I didn't want it to be my worst match because I felt really bad. I thought it was a lock for Taker and Goldberg. I thought that was done, and I hated doing that one because I felt really shitty about it because I didn't think they wanted to be out there, but it was with the guys. Both guys went for the paycheck, and it could have been a bigger match, but it's that Hell in the Cell with Seth and Bray for me. It's just maybe the worst WWE match I've ever seen in my life. Just no idea what to do. absolutely, you know, you want to have your friends that are non-wrestling fans make fun of you for wrestling being fake and using that fake word. It's absolutely watching this match and seeing curb stomp after curb stomp and then having a sledgehammer DQ and a Hell in a Cell. It's this one.
Well, you look at it. This is a main event to Hell in a Cell. And it just, it failed and it bombed. And they refused to acknowledge that it bombed. It's like, no, it's all fine. It's all fine. This is what we wanted. This is what we wanted. And it speaks to a much larger problem that the WWE has. But this just, it failed miserably.
You have that as well, Joel?
Yeah.
Moby clean sweeping it?
You damn right I am. Look, this is, when you talk about, like, you talk about the Goldberg and Taker one. I think Taker kind of said it best on the Stone Cold, show that he, on the network, when he said it was a bad day at the office. Like, it didn't start off that bad. A guy got hurt and got a, you know.
Again. And fucking Bill.
Yeah, and just something, you know, it went wrong. And I'm pretty sure they could have had a good match. Not that I don't think Bray and Seth could have had a good match, but I don't think that these characters in these situations, there's any way they could. That match fell apart. The other match is booked horribly. But it's not just the match. The build to that match was the shits. Seth's character leading into it was the shits, as was just the idea that they were in. It was like their first match, and it was at Hell in a Cell. The match itself then was terrible, and the follow-up was terrible. And especially the way people within the company, and Seth especially, were defending it. Like, to me, this is they should have done a make-good. They should have had a Hell in the Cell match a week later on Raw and give it to people free to say, we're sorry, we screwed up.
Instead, they
eventually did the title change at a show in Saudi Arabia and Zinko screw themselves. I'm still mad about this one. I will always be mad about this one.
It was bad. It's one of those times I always see people like, oh, I'm going to cancel the WWE Network. And like, no, you're not. You're going to watch NXT. And it was the first time I'm like, I don't blame you, because they literally just spit in your face on that. It was a subpar show too. And maybe we'll come back to it.
Everything about, yeah, it's, you know what? It shows nothing shows the arrogance of this company better than this. You're right. And they're not just disrespect, but almost disdain for the fans.
I believe that show too, when maybe we'll come back to it. I know I will, but we'll get to it. I had for the worst match prior in 2018, I had the best in the world in Saudi. Joe, you had Roman and Brock, and Mo, you had AJ and Nock. I think that was more disappointing than bad, but yeah. That one brings back a lot of bad memories. Next up, we have the worst feud of the year. I had Hunter and Taker. Joe, you had WWE versus fans.
And another one.
And Mo, you had Bryan and The Miz. Again, I don't think it was as much bad. It's just disappointing for what it could be. Joel, you tease something big, so go with it, man.
It is Seth Rollins versus Twitter.
Ooh.
The man should not. Well, we it's worked out because he's got a heel character that I think he can run with. But
taking food off people's tables.
Just so many stupid things. I should change it to Seth Rollins and his mouth. Because they're just things that come out of his mouth at times. It's like, what are you want to be the face of the company, then why are you saying this? It's the same problem Roman had, and now you're repeating that. And you see other young talent starting to follow along with it. And like, what are you guys doing? This is not how you win fans over. Just do what the Bucks did and just quit Twitter. But instead, you got to stay on there and run your mouth.
That's a fantastic one. Mo, what do you got?
I'll go a little more traditional, though. I do love that you go out of the box in this, Joel.
Yeah.
I do have the whole Lacey and especially Baron Corbin, Seth Rollins.
That's mine too.
Like, what, and just Baron Corbin in that position at all, like, as much as you could say he got the heat, the fact is the company had to come on screen this year and say, our product is bad, and it's mainly this guy and this feud. Like, That's terrible. You know? Yeah, that's how bad, you know, all this stuff was. Just, I guess this actually would have been after, because that was when he was still the commissioner, or whatever, GM's assistant, I guess, was when they came on screen and said he's killing the company. But like,
was bad because it's the summertime, and for some people like me, that's more of a time to watch wrestling, because you don't have to, there's no television to watch. There's no NFL, there's no NBA, there's just really baseball. But this year in the Olympics,
you're right. I just want to get my timeline right. That they said this guy in this position of as authority heel is killing our company and responsible for our terrorism. And then you turn around and put him in a feud for the title. The guy that you just said is killing the company.
And you
think about this.
Oh, you just fucking beat me to my worst angle of the year. That's what they said December 2018 when they came out. You're in charge now. We trust the fans.
Did, huh?
That was a year ago. We just did Best Angle, and Joel just stole mine. It was Corbin retiring Kurt Angle.
Oh, God.
We had all these dream matches of Kurt. You know, the entire time he was in TNA, we're like, oh, Kurt Angle's going to come back. And I know he was slow in the ring, but there was just so many better choices to put it there. He did take the rip, what he got there, and he did have a somewhat successful season winning King of the Ring. And like I said, I think the back half after this feud has been a much better year for Baron Corbin. But, everything before then is still really, really bad. And the Kurt stuff, everyone wanted it to be Cena. And the worst part about it is they almost teased it like it was Cena on their social media at times, to the point where like, oh, it's not going to be Corbin. Like, Cena's eventually just going to come out and do this with Kurt, and it'll be fantastic to see Cena in the ring again with Kurt. That's how this should go out. And Cena came out and did the Thugonomics scene, which was not – it was fine. It was what it was. But this was just a brutal way to end, to me, one of my favorite wrestlers of the Attitude Era. And to see him go out like that to a guy like Corbin – was really bad. So that's my worst angle of the year.
Do you realize, jump in real quick, do you guys realize that this is the first time that we did not have a John Cena pay-per-view match in, like, I think it was 18 years?
Big Show have a match.
Pardon me?
And the Big Show, the first time since 1993 that Big Show did not have a match.
Big Show did not have a match, and John Cena didn't have a pay-per-view match.
Yeah. By the way, last year, for worst angle, I had Renee and Dean Ambrose. Joel, you had Dean using Roman Reigns, and Mo, you had heel turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, looking at Dean come up a lot last year. Joel, what do you have for your worst angle?
Oh, it's, again, Enzo and Cass in the G1. That's just such a stupid, stupid, stupid move. And it's the reason why New Japan talent aren't is why Ring of Honor talent aren't on Wrestle Kingdom, and it's why the rumors that are starting to bubble of AEW and New Japan are there. It was the first real crack in that relationship. Guys didn't want to work for Ring of Honor or come over and do stuff with them. And just everything that came from Ring of Honor just made them look worse and worse as time went. But this moment is something you can turn the clocks back and go, why in God's name did you do that?
Mo, what do you got?
Yeah, you know what? I can't disagree with that. Like, I wasn't thinking about it, but you're right. When you think about it, the ROH is the ones who brought them in and didn't tell in New Japan. And, yeah, I mean, people like Juice Robinson wouldn't work for the company afterwards. You know, it's like I did have, like, the Bayley heel turn, because I just think it was terrible in so many ways. And
it's been better. It's worked out, kind of.
I don't think so, personally. I think that the heel turn was terrible, and I think it's because it stems from years of ineptitude that caused this to even be necessary. Like, I did have that, but
it was a layup, right? It was female John Cena. It was
exactly
a layup.
Exactly. Unbelievable. So, yeah, I did have that, but I'm going to go instead with Enzo and Cass. I think,
you know, it's funny about that too. When they were on Jericho's podcast, Cass had said, like, Jericho asked, like, well, who knew? He's like, the only person that knew was Bully.
He's the problem.
He said that's the only person that knew was Bully Ray that we were doing this. He's the one that brought us in to do it, and he's the one that let us in the back.
He might be the real life asshole of the year.
Yeah, he may be. Maybe we'll get to him in a bit. Worst pay per view of the year. Last year, I picked Crown Jewel. Mo picked Crown Jewel, and Jewel just said, "Fuck it, all the Saudi shows." This year, I think as bad as politically as the Saudi shows are, they weren't actually something. Like the last one was actually not a terrible wrestling show for the most part. It actually wasn't too bad.
The one with
With Goldberg and everything. And, that was bad. Terrible. I think for me, it's Hell in the Cell. It was a pay per view that didn't need to happen. You know, it had, I believe that's the one where Charlotte beats Bayley in that. I can't even remember, but it was just left nothing to be desired. You know, it left me as someone that, you know, has now kind of dropped down to more as a casual fan of, I'm giving you my time and you literally just spit in my face and didn't give me anything enjoyable on this night to watch your show. And the Hell in the Cell, it's been said so many times, this is the gimmick that, you know, we grew up with that's so important and should be built up so responsibly. And when you have that big match, it should work out well. And in the past years, they've done some good matches with it. The Usos and the New Day come to mind. Even, I think, a few years ago, Randy and Jeff Hardy was actually pretty fun. But this year, one of the worst matches, maybe the worst match in the history of the WWE, and that outshines anything to me. The fact they had the worst match and everything else from the show was just so throwaway. So I have Hell in the Cell. Mo?
Yeah, no, it's Hell in the Cell. It's the worst. It's the worst of the worst. It's everything you just said is accurate. Let's put it that way.
Joel, clean sweep it?
I'm different. I'm going to go different. It is the ROH part of the G1 Supercard. That was ROH's chance. They were in the mecca of pro wrestling, MSG. This is the biggest moment to shine. The only thing that saves that whole thing is the Japan side. Naito and Ibushi, Tanahashi and Zack Sabre Jr., and then Okada and Jay White, Will Ospreay and Jeff Cobb. But overall, the bulk of the matches and just anything that was just ROH was just brutal. And you're seeing it. You're seeing it in attendance. You're seeing it just for draws and interest. Like, they put Final Battle on YouTube for free, like the recent one that they did. Like, that tells you the state of that company. And I feel like their downturn really started at that point. You can whine and snivel and go, oh, the Elite abandoned us. AEW's hurting us. You grab your shoelaces, you tie up your shoes tight, and you just go to work. And didn't feel like ROH went to work. And you saw in the G1, that should have been their moment to be like, we have to deliver. We have to give
Japan did that. Rather than
But that's the thing. Also, they did think they were delivering. What they gave you is what they thought people wanted. It was tone deaf, but they thought they were delivering. And I do have to say that the ladder match was pretty good, but the mistake was this girl didn't go over. Mm-hmm.
And Taven did, but it was like, oh well, you know, Marty's contract run up, but so was Taven's, and then they let his contract run up. I think that just makes us jump to the worst show, the worst company of the year, which I know Joel and I
have been. I didn't actually give mine, but it is Hell in Cell, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to just jump to worst company of the year? I have Ring of Honor. Joel has Ring of Honor. Do you have that as well, Mo?
Nope.
Oh, you don't have Ring of Honor, Joel?
No, I don't have Ring of Honor. As much as I've shit on them, I've got something else.
I just think for what the Ring of Honor had, the you know, you had the opportunity to have Madison Square Garden sold out. It was such a big deal to have that. It's something that I never thought a non-WWE show would ever do, if you would ask me. You, when this whole free agent thing was going back and forth between AEW, WWE, and them, and they get Roosh, and they get Bandino, and they get all these guys that really matter, and then they still have Marty Scurll. They still have one of the most entertaining guys in the Elite, and they continually don't pull the trigger to make him the guy, then doing the Enzo and Cass stuff, just becoming a completely forgettable company. So I have Reign of Honor. But Joel, who do you have?
It's WWE. They have the deepest talent pool of any wrestling company out there. They should be top dog. We should be like, New Japan's good and all, and there's a lot of quality, but WWE, they just have all this talent. and all this wealth of just wrestling knowledge, and they should be spitting out quality content. And like Mo said at the beginning, they're on TV the most. They have the most amount of hours. They have the most amount of exposure. But yet, it's still consistently underwhelming. There are some bright moments, but overall, you look at this company as if you break it down into sports, Ring of Honor really feels like an AHL, ECHL team. WWE feels like that NHL team that is just the Edmonton Oilers of constantly rebuilding, constantly getting quality talent, and then finally
the Flames fan had to get that one in.
I like it.
It's true, though. It's true. Yeah, we can go through all the talent that the Oilers have had that have failed. And you even look at this is a side rant, but I'm going on it. You look at it, the way they've managed Connor and Dreisaitl. These guys are playing more minutes defense than most defensemen, and you're seeing what's happening with that because these guys are getting burnt out. And then when the hardest part of the season kicks in with the playoffs, they're toast. They're tired and they're worn out and they're beat up because they're constantly focused on, and they get worn down and they get hurt. The same thing with WWE. You're gonna put so much on AJ Styles. You're going to put so much on Seth. You're going to put so much on Roman. You're overexposing these guys, turning the fans on them in Seth Rollins, potentially injuring them. AJ's 43. Like, AJ should almost be at a stage where he's a special attraction, but he's not. He's a guy that is constantly relied on, and AJ's good enough that you have to rely on him. This is a company that has had several different little things that have crept up, and you're like, ugh, this history. Like, the Saudi stuff weighs way more than the concussion stuff. That's hard to quantify, but I just feel like the dealings with Saudi is worse than the concussion protocol. But even still, the concussion protocol in WWE is crap, because we saw Kairi Sane in a very vulnerable, dangerous position with a talent that got very upset with her and physically took it out on her. We're not talking about it anymore because the news cycle always resets itself. But there are just so many things within WWE that make you go, this should be top talent, and yet you guys are constantly getting first-round draft picks and pissing them away. That's what Adam Cole is. Adam Cole is a franchise first-round draft pick, and unfortunately, once he gets away from NXT, I just don't know what – I just think they're going to see him as too small. I don't think Vince is going to look at him and go, he's a star.
No. Got WWE as well. Last year, clean sweep for us by WWE, by the way.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, ROH deserves a lot, but it's not. Joel really summed it up well.
You did.
I was gonna say that the point for me is WWE lost like 28% of their ratings at one point this year from the prior year. They went on to Fox. Fox this last week did the same rating as USA, which is frightening when you think about it. They put out those shows with the draft shows, just showing how far they are out of it. But in addition to that, there's the Saudi stuff, the concussion stuff, and we could talk about Goldberg as well in there. There's also what happened with the WWE app, and how it's still not fixed, and that, since it's relaunched, and the WWE 2K two. This is a company, like, talk about spitting in your fans' faces, putting out the worst video game, glitchiest video game in anybody's memory.
It probably didn't work ever. It doesn't work now. Cool. Like,
it doesn't work. You're right. Right now on PlayStation, I believe it's not working because
or Xbox because it's 2020. You have to work in 2020.
You have to reset your machine to be your prior if you want to play the game. Yeah. And that's just the latest glitch. And this company let that happen. Like, the incompetence in so many areas is phenomenal.
You guys have convinced me to switch to WWE, by the way, because it's
like the video game that was the time.
Well, it's Joel. You had it mastered it perfectly. Mo did. I think the rating thing really was the big thing for me too. And look, you know, I know Mo said on the Decade Pod is like, AEW is now my home base. For me, like, I'm always going to be Team WWE. It's what I grew up with, is what it is. But it is hard to be there. And I guess kind of realizing to me the thing that made it the hardest to me is something that happened this week was the Lana and Liv thing of using LGBT relations in a situation of a comedic stance in 2019. Is embarrassing, especially when you have someone in your company like Sonya Deville, who is LGBT and has asked to use more of her, you know, of that, of what she is, and let's talk about it. You've had someone like Darren Young that you ambushed with TMZ to say that he came out, and you know, you've had the stuff with Finn Balor is for everyone and never using that, and you finally do something with LGBT. And I did think Lana stepped up and did a really good job of talking about it on her Twitter, but still the way that they used it with Liv as kind of just a joke and just kind of like Jerry Springer Days of Our Life shock moment of a lesbian relationship. Oh my, when there's much better television using LGBT in more serious and better ways. And we should be at a point where we're using those characters in better and serious ways. And especially when you have someone as talented as Sonya Deville that just happens to be gay and you're not using that in a positive matter. You're just using it as a shock factor is
never
absolutely
acknowledged once, David.
Never
on. It's incredible. As was Darren Young, never once even acknowledged. Just another great point. You know, when you say you're WWE, if you're always going to be a WWE person and they're the worst product, it's no wonder you don't want to watch and your love for wrestling falls, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just natural that's going
to
be the case.
Even the Kofi thing, as great as it is, the fact it took so fucking long to get there, and you see some great videos of Shaggy.
And the way he lost the title and never got a rematch and all that shit.
There's that too. And, you know, you see the video originally of Shad Gaspar and MVP crying that this finally happened. And they did the interview back in the day with Peter Rosenberg when – I'm not a big fan of Rosenberg, but he did a really good podcast back in the day of not having an African-American champion. And they finally got that. And then to have the way they lost, you know, Vince and them just look at it as, well, God damn it, we just got to get the belt on Brock and blah, blah, blah. But they lose the idea that – you know, we're in a situation now in culture where things matter so much for representation, and we're getting there, doing better with representation, but WWE is so fucking terrible at it, and that title by Kofi having it meant so much for the black community that he had it, and everyone knew eventually he had to lose it, but for him to do that was not just a spit on the face to the hard work that Kofi did, it was also to the spit of the black community and celebrating Kofi get that first title reign.
Well, not only that, but it's also everything that Brian politicked for at the beginning to make this happen. That's basically pissing away everything he did. Anyone that did a job for Kofi, anyone that put Kofi over to help him get to that next step, is just saying it didn't matter. We don't care. I mean, the one thing that I'm shocked about with WWE is they haven't made a bigger deal that it's an interracial couple between Lana and Bobby Lashley.
But no, that's part of the reason why it's there. That's salacious. See, they're not hitting up on it. They think that's salacious enough and awkward enough, and that's the whole point. This is all the worst of Paul Heyman, and why I was scared that putting a guy who's that old and who was booking from that long ago. As much as I respect what he did in the past, why it was wrong in 2019, 2020, and it's been proven right.
Not to mention the stuff with as far, you know, it made me laugh at times, but the Maria and Kanellis stuff, you know, he's such a talented guy. And look, I don't
forgot about that against, for worse angle.
Yeah, I don't hold anything against WWE for not giving his release. The dude signed a contract for 5 years, and then he asked for 2 weeks later. As far as the company goes, that's a different argument. I get it from their point of view on that. I do. It's like, we just signed you, dude. Like, come on. But, you know, for everything that they've done with that, I did like the idea of Pregnant Champ. I thought that was kind of a unique idea. But just kind of wasting what a good couple is with a real couple that and just these these storylines with these couples have just been so terrible. But, you know, the Saudi issues are there, not to mention everything that John Oliver pointed out this year. But I think a big concern for me with them is their lack of understanding of representation in their company when they have such a good job of though, you know, you talked about Joel, all the talent they have there, but they don't understand the use of the representation that we have there, having some tremendous Asian women, Io Shirai and Asuka, and having some tremendous African-Americans and LGBT competitors. It's embarrassing.
Pearl Harbor, Vince McMahon's the only person who thinks it happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It makes if you're Asian, Japanese, you're heel. Like, that's it. And it's always been that way. It's so like Roger damn frustrating. And yeah.
Well, you look at it, you look at how TLC ended. Asuka got her moment, and then it was gone right away. Mm-hmm. It's just forgotten because we had to focus on Roman and Corbin.
Well, even her win at they're finally doing something with it because they kind of have to. But I mean, even what happened to Asuka after winning at the Royal Rumble, beating Becky, you really look at it, it's a joke.
Ah, forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shouts to you guys for convincing me. It was like, yeah, Ring of Honor, you know, they dropped the ball a little bit. But, yeah. And then, look, it wasn't even to the point of, like I brought up, everything that John Oliver brought up this year, which was never, you know, really triumphed by the fans the way that John Oliver wanted to. But, you know, for those that didn't get to watch it, but if you're listening to this wrestling podcast, I can't imagine you didn't. That John Oliver piece did such a damning job in the company in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Worst Show. I'm assuming we're going to stay with WWE on that. Last year was a clean sweep for Raw. Is it staying the same this year, Mo?
Nope.
No? Okay. Mo, what do you got?
For me, it's still Raw.
Okay.
Being 3 hours. I actually think SmackDown being 2 hours and being not quite as, let's say, it doesn't try as hard. It's not good, but it doesn't try as hard as WWE. WWE tries, or sorry, Raw tries too hard. So, but it is between those two shows, so still for me.
Joe, what do you got?
It's SmackDown. You're on Fox. This was supposed to be a big, massive deal, and now I think I watched the first one, saw how they were handling things. I watched another one at some point, and I was just like, I'm out. I don't care. I've taken more joy on Raw watching Aleister Black, Buddy Murphy, and Drew McIntyre recently than I have anything SmackDown has to offer.
Looking back at this since 2016, we have all picked Raw every single year that we've done this for the worst show, by the way. It'll be different for me this year. I'm going to go SmackDown as well. A little bit of a personal reason. Number one, the Fox deal, you know, and you kind of dropped the ball on that, but if you guys remember, 2 years ago, I picked SmackDown as my favorite show because it was. Like, Tuesdays to watch SmackDown were an absolute joy for me, an absolute pleasure. When you had AJ there, Brian was the commissioner, I thought the women's division was good. You had the Usos there. The tag division was good with the New Day in them. I thought SmackDown was delivering on a really good front end, you know, for being a WWE show and how much they dropped the ball and stuff. I thought SmackDown was doing a really good job. And now you have dog food stuff and just a lot of – you have Lacey Evans and this Bayley feud that never seems to ever be ending. It's just not an enjoyable show. And while I agree with you, Mo, Rod does try too hard at times. I think they've started to figure things out a little bit, and at least on there I get to watch Ricochet, I get to watch Rey Mysterio, and I get to watch AJ.
I think if Raw was 2 hours, I might go the other way, but because Raw is three,
no,
it
and
feels like more
point.
Of a chore. That's what it is for me. I'd rather watch SmackDown because it's only 2 hours.
And the marathon's about to end for this podcast as we have the last category. The worst broadcaster, last year Joel and I both picked Coachman, and Mo, you said, I don't fucking care who's ever the third guy in Raw.
It's still that way.
Unless, except for actually, Joe.
You know what? Joe was good. You know, yeah.
It's Renee for me. Yeah. God bless her. I think she's really good on backstage because that's what she's good at. But at the desk, Renee, that just wasn't for her.
Well, she was at the time I picked this last year, had just been elevated recently to that position. And that was the
And I said I liked her last year. And you're like, oh, just wait. So good call by you on that one. Who do you have for this year for that, Mo?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do have her too. Like it was, Beth Phoenix has gotten better.
Yeah,
I think she was. I think it was a little rough at first, and she's gotten better. But I'm not at all a fan of what Renee did.
She's the back and forth.
She was not a fan of what she did. That's
no, enough. I almost That's wanted to pick Corey. I almost wanted to pick Corey just because he's such an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
This
whole Joel, thing with Mauro Ranallo.
It's like, embarrassing.
Yeah.
Joel, who do you got?
Yeah, it's Renee. Yeah. It should be. Had I listened to it more, I could have found more reasons to pick Corey.
Mm.
Just purely out of spite. But it's Renee. I think Renee's in, like, to put a positive spin in it, I think Renee's in a much better spot. And as Moxley said, she's untouchable in the company right now because she's so good at the role that she's in. And you can knock Renee for being in that spot, but that really comes down to WWE not recognizing where the talent is strong at and where it's weak at.
Mick Foley was in the same spot.
Just throw him wherever and it'll have to work. And when it doesn't work, it's like, oh, well, why are you failing?
Well, even Dio Madden, who was like, why is Dio Madden here? God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I debated picking him, but he was such a short stance. And I think it was just a case with Dio. And why I didn't pick him, I just think it was a young guy that's like, yeah, sure, I'll take my break to get to Raw. Sure, whatever it takes. And that's why I felt bad picking Dio in it, despite him not being good. I think it was a guy that just took whatever he could get for an opportunity and took that opportunity to go on Raw before finally probably being micromanaged by Vince. I'm like, yeah, I'm going back to the PC. Bye.
Well, but how does he say no to that?
Exactly.
Like, he can't. He can't say no, right?
No.
And I have to say, I did consider JR. As painful as it is, I did consider
JR. I did too, because like I said, like if those that watch Botchmania, like it's getting borderline to, I'm wondering when Matthew is just gonna like the JR segment of the week, because he's on Botchmania at least like for a solid minute almost now every Botchmania that you watch, because the mispronunciations of names, moves, and you know, our hearts don't want to let us do it, but our brains are starting to lead that way a little bit. So there it is, 2019 year in review. It was a fantastic year, and what a year it's been. It'll be a very exciting this year. WrestleMania takes place in Tampa for 36. We'll see what happens there. Wrestle Kingdom is going to be starting just in a short while after this recording, and Royal Rumble is a few weeks away from this point, and AEW, next pay-per-view, is – I don't know the name of that,
Revolution. But
it's in February though, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. February. Yeah.
What's it called again, Joel?
Revolution.
I do think there'll be a lot more AEW stuff on here this time next year with the full year for the company. Last thing, as we always do in here, just to make a few predictions of what we will and will not see for people to come back. I'll ask you two really quick rapid fire questions. Give me yes or no, and then we'll get out of here. So let's just go with the two of the bigger ones really quick here that we keep on going back and forth. The first big one that seems more likely, because you keep on hearing it every 4 weeks, will Edge wrestle in 2020? Mo?
I don't think so.
Joel?
Nope.
Okay. Will CM Punk wrestle in 2020? Mo?
Nope.
No. That one's easier.
You think it's easier?
I think so, yeah.
Will Goldberg wrestle again this year?
Yes.
Yep.
Will Undertaker wrestle?
Yes.
Will The Big Show have a match?
No.
Or do you think he's done? You think he's done?
He's off that sitcom, isn't he?
Yeah, on Netflix, right?
I think so, yeah.
And then I really don't think there's any other really big comebacks really left. I think Dave Bautista's obviously done and is going to the Hall of Fame. Is there anyone else, you know, from the Hall of Fame that you can think of that you'd want to see in the Hall of Fame this year, Mo?
Okay, that I want to see in the Hall of Fame? I
could think
of lots of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah, I can think of tons of people. I want Edge in pretty badly. I want the British Bulldogs in pretty badly. But unfortunately, I think as soon as the NWO went in and I went, with X-Pac and more than that, Hulk Hogan, not only is he back, but he's in the Hall of Fame again, despite what he did and said. Never be good with that.
Yeah, I think...
I will never forget seeing people at WrestleMania turn their back when Hogan came out.
Yeah.
That's burned in my memory.
Well, speaking of him, do you think he has a match in 2020?
No.
No.
You think Steve Austin does?
Nope.
No.
All right, there we go.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think this year, unlike other years, there's not that will they, won't they. I think Edge and Punk are the two biggest ones that you could see. I guess it'll be more of a free agent side, but more on the women's side with Tyra Valkyrie, Morrison's wife, and with Tessa, where they both go. Because I don't think there's any other big male free agents coming out in 2020, I believe, right?
Here's a question.
Sure.
Will AEW and New Japan work together?
Yeah, that's the big one to me.
Sure seems to be looking that way.
Night 2 for Wrestle Kingdom is very important. We're recording this before it happens, and this podcast will probably come out after it.
Do either of you see an ROH or an Impact being around by the end of the year?
Yeah,
I believe. I mean,
I guess the Access deal up
the back, Access, right? For sure. Yeah. And ROH, like I say, is still cheap programming. It doesn't matter. Like, it's
clear.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as, oof, man.
NWA get a TV deal?
I don't know.
I wanted to put Power somewhere on here. And I debated doing it for Best TV Show, but I couldn't do it over NXT, but because it just wasn't a long enough time. But I've really enjoyed NWA Power.
It's like you could put them Best Newcomer.
Yeah, you really could. You really could. So there we go. Everyone, thanks for listening to the 2019 year review. We also have a decade year review that you can go check out for the One Fall podcast. And I'm sure Mo and Joel at some time will be able to recap the entire Wrestle Kingdom weekend for you. It's a weekend now. So a lot of stuff there. And I just want to say, since I won't be on that podcast, no matter what happens tonight, I just want to say thank you to Liger, someone that tape traded back in the day, watching the best of the Super Juniors, the Super J Cups in the early 90s. Liger was someone that caught my eye really early, and unfortunately, I never got to see him live. I know Joel did, so that's
Liger
awesome.
And Muta,
that's fucking awesome. But yeah, thank you, Liger, one of the true legends, and a really good feud this year too. I debated putting him for the feud that he had this year. Yeah, thank you, Liger. Appreciate it. And look forward to seeing what he does at Wrestle Kingdom and one of the bigger retirements that we'll have coming into 2020. All right, and that is it. So we will wrap up here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Until next time, cheers, and enjoy the day, people.
Goodbye. And good night. Bang.